and welcome back to A Man Who Talks Over Copyright-Free Music While Pictures of Things Happen in the Background, just like every History Channel ever. I've been told I need more subscribers, so secret analytical powers have been revealed to me and told me that this is the best way to earn new followers, so I bid you welcome, one and all, to my hot tub stream! We have everything the youth of today wish and more, and we have a lot to go over in this part, so I hope you don't mind if I try to spice things up a little bit. You know, because things might get a little steamy. Fuck, I hate myself so much. But first, a few corrections and clarifications. Yes, this is a rotary cannon. It is not a minigun. I know everyone calls it a minigun, and I'm a weird British person from the weird wacky world of Bretonnia, not an American gun nut. So I was not aware of this. Yeah, this is a miniature version of this one. So this is the minigun, and this is the, I don't know. Like, someone explained it in the comments, and then some Marines quartermaster called me on Discord and sat explaining it to me for about an hour, and I want to die. Secondly, the maths. We're getting to it. Shut your hole. The problem with A10 fans is I'm not entirely convinced they know what math is. Hence why to them, this $1 trillion jet is a waste of money, but this $6 trillion jet, that's perfectly fine. And on that point, the US does not routinely take statistics of how their aircraft are actually performing. Or at least those statistics are not, you know, available to the public. The public being me. With the exception of air-to-air kills, losses, and losses from ground fire. And the statistics that are public knowledge do not have variable sources and seem to have been pulled right out of someone's asshole.
We'll talk about that later.
So my main source for all of this is this 1993 study, which detailed the use and effectiveness of every single weapon used in the Gulf War, including this very large section on the A-10. Link in the description, even though I know no one's going to read it. I get excited about reading big, long technical manuals and after-action reports and intelligence reports and all that, all declassified shit. I love that crap. I'll sit and read it for hours. You, however, maybe not. Maybe you want to do something a bit more, you know, normal. Like, I don't know. Shower. Go outside. Snowboard. I don't know. What do people do? What do the youth of today do these days? Uh-huh. Yeah? Alright, cool. Anyway, the 93 report basically confirms what I'm calling the laser pig loop. Since we all get to name something after us, that probably exists already. Shut up! I'm calling it the laser pig loop, okay? I want a thing! People think Soviet shit is best because rugged, battle-hardened, Soviets don't have Pentagon. Sorry, let me do that line again. People think Soviets don't have Pentagon-level corruption. People don't think that the Russians are corrupt. So people don't think the Russians are corrupt. And they're all patriots. So war happens. Soviet shit turns out to be shit. People forget war. Russia's strong memes. And then we're back to square one. I'll leave that for a different video just to get you hyped up about it for when I finally make it in like a couple of months or whatever. When I do a fully unqualified analysis of the T-14 and annoy some Russian people. And then I'll get angry comments like, "You're not real, man. My grandmother once beat head off Nazi tank, then flew baby across border to safety. That baby, Putin himself." Something like that, I don't know. So unlike my previous video, I'm actually going to talk about the A-10 and not just bitch about Pierre Spray. But if you've not seen part one, I'll sum it up for you now. Spray didn't design the A-10, Alexander Cartavelli did, and Spray has been taking credit for his work since he died in 74. And if you don't know why everyone in the military enthusiast community hates him, now you do. So this video has a lot of statistics. There's lots of trifacts and stuff I've pulled out from various technical documentations and after-action reports. I've tried to spice things up a little bit, rather than just read it out to you in a monotone voice like other far more successful YouTube channels. So hopefully this will appeal to everyone. A-10 fans, members of non-credible defense, and normal people. So if you're that one guy's dad that keeps banging on about how great the A-10 is because brr, pay attention. I'm going to break down the aircraft's performance into three segments, since it is quite complicated. We're going to talk about its survivability, its performance as a tank hunter, and its performance as a closer support vehicle. You can tell that I am absolutely off my fucking tits, can't you? I'm very drunk. You cannot do this sober. I'm sorry. I'm gonna do all these in reverse order since it's more fun.
Right, so in terms of close air support, there isn't really much in the way of statistics, as none had ever really taken, because the US for some reason doesn't think that that's important. So comments on the A-10's capability as a close air support weapon is taken mostly from the experiences of many US and British infantry and that one Canadian guy who called for air support and found an A-10 was being sent their way. Now, fighting enemy entrenched infantry, the A-10 should be perfect for this task. It's got a giant cannon on it. You know, it's a 30mm cannon that'll rip through anything. You know, cement, cardboard, people, dogs, nothing. Absolutely nothing can stand up to that. Doesn't matter how many dogs you strap to yourself, that thing is going to kill you. So, why do almost all of the vets I have talked to who have experienced an A-10 coming to aid them fucking hate it? Now, I should point out, a lot of vets do in fact love it, but there is a striking difference between people who have experienced it as a ground attack aircraft, you know, shooting at things from a safe distance away, and those who've had it brrrr down upon them, attacking targets mere meters away. The reason for that discrepancy is that cannon is not very accurate. In ideal circumstances, Fairchild consider any shot landing within 12 meters of where the pilot was aiming as accurate, of which the A-10 can land about 80% of its shots, you know, accurately. In less than ideal conditions, I've been informed ballpark numbers are anywhere between 50 to 20%. I mean, it depends who you talk to, really. Apparently, it's got a lot to do with the vibrations from the gun. It causes the entire plane to wiggle around and can throw off your accuracy if you're going too slow. That's why they tend to fire in, like, little short bursts. It's also got a lot to do with, like, your angle of attack and everything. Like, I don't know. Like, an A-10 pilot tried to explain all this to me in Discord, and about 4 hours later, I wanted to die. Here's the thing. Even in ideal circumstances, which never happen on a battlefield, 12 meters average is a big distance. That's a bus. That's a whole freaking bus. So between you and the enemy, whatever the A-10 decides to target, you know, you have a radius of buses, which we shall call the splash zone. And about 20% of the several thousand rounds the A-10 will fire is going to land outside of that, where you are. This puts you in something which we in the sciences like to call an awkward position. For example, if you're taking fire from a building and your men are taking cover outside and you call for air support, if an A-10 shows up, you are within the splash zone, unless it's like a really tall building. In March of 2003, a friendly fire incident involving the US Marines depicted this exact scenario. The Marines, under heavy fire, called for air support and two A-10 showed up and liberally applied bullets to the infected area, killing 10 Marines and wounding a further 17. In 2015, declassified reports obtained by USA Today, you know that free magazine you get, like, on your doorstep every day. Look, I've been to the US twice, and every time I've stayed there, someone's given me a copy of US Today every freaking day. It's just been there on the doorstep. I don't know if it delivers it. I'd be awake at 6 in the morning. There it is. Where did it come from? You fuckers power-dropping these things in at, like, 3 in the morning. You know, just drunk British tourists staggering home to their motel rooms and fucking there it is. What's happening in the US today? Haha. Now I know. Right, so 2015, declassified reports obtained by USA Today showed that the A-10 had killed more friendlies and civilians than any other US aircraft in blue-on-blue incidents. And keep in mind, reports on accidental civilian deaths only began in 2010, when the A-10 is being used, you know, a lot less than it used to be. We'll get to that in a minute. What this means for infantry is when the A-10 shows up, your squad has to take cover. In Iraq and Afghanistan, insurgent forces had learned to spot when US forces would start taking cover and would promptly do the same. The A-10 would fly in, perform its run, and once it was over, the insurgents would emerge from cover having taken very few losses. And as a result of complaints, A-10s now began to carry cluster bombs and hydro rocket pods in order to supplement the cannon, or use in place of it, something Pierce Bray said it would never need to do. Now, the problem here is exactly what defines a close air support mission. By its very nature, it is an undefinable mission. Someone is under heavy fire, they have called for air support. That's it. When air support arrive, they generally have very little information and could be facing anything, from a group of infantry spread out over a wide area taking cover in buildings and ruins or rubble, to entrenched infantry supported by armored units, to a tank, to people in Toyota Hiluxes driving around in circles firing 50 cals, to a fucking monster. Whatever shows up has to be equipped to deal with whatever it may find, with the expectation that information from the ground team may be limited, as, and I cannot stress this enough, people under fire get stressed. Stressed people are not a reliable source of information, especially if they are green. This is why the A-10 has more than just the fucking gun. This is why Burton's Blitzfighter design would have never worked in this role. That's why, in spite of all Spray's whining, the A-10 carries bombs and missiles and rocket pods and extra cannons, and why it was originally equipped with infrared laser-guided missiles, so infantry on the ground could use laser detonators to guide the A-10's bombs onto targets. Targets that they could see that the pilots might not. And all of this would have been obvious if you just shut your fucking mouth and think for a fucking minute. This is the biggest problem with the A-10. While it is designed for close air support, its main weapon is also its biggest liability in most situations it can expect to encounter, and the pilots want to use it and have blatantly admitted to overusing it even in situations where it was not required. But you know, I understand, it's better to waste ammo and save lives than, you know, conserve ammo and see someone die. But this is coupled with the second point, and it's a doozy. It's a doozy. You see, the situational awareness of the A-10 is bad. Very bad. So bad, in fact, pilots during the Gulf War were using binoculars to try and identify targets. And I'm pretty confident I don't need to explain why having bad situational awareness is essentially the worst thing you could possibly have when you're firing hundreds of depleted uranium explosive rounds into an area where friendlies are present. But if you insist, I'll give you a couple of minutes to think about it. You thought about it? Good. Okay, we need to talk about something else now, because people mention this fuck all the time, okay? Speaking to a number of US veterans, I was told the story of a blue-on-blue incident during the Iraqi War. And if you don't know this story, tuck yourselves in, because it's a big one. The story goes that an A-10 spotted a column of tanks advancing and dived to attack them, the problem being that they were British Scimitar tanks, light recon vehicles made out of aluminium, very squishy. The A-10 managed to destroy two tanks and a supporting engineer vehicle before he received a radio call informing he was firing on friendly troops.
Pop-off, 3-5, 93-4, go. Roger, pop-off. Hey, be advised that in the 3-1-2-2 and 3-2-2-2 group box, you have friendly armor in the area. Yellow, small armored tanks, just be advised.
Shit! Got the smoke.
Hey, Pop-Off 3-4, board your mission. You've got, looks like we may have a blue-on-blue situation.
God bless it!
One soldier was killed, and had the A-10 arrived moments later, the death toll would have been considerably more political, as the tanks had stopped due to a number of civilians, including children, and began advancing towards them from a nearby town. The Brits in Iraq found that friendly fire incidents and close calls from American units, especially A-10s, were quite frequent, and supposedly there was a request from British High Command in Iraq to stop A-10s from being used in British zones. The cockpit footage was released in 2007 and makes for somewhat grisly viewing. You can even hear the pilot vomiting once he learns he's fired on friendly units.
I'm gonna be sick.
But before that, the moments leading up to the incident, the A-10 spots the vehicles and tries to confirm or not if they are friendly. He's not using any of the electronic systems that could confirm if or not they are, because he doesn't have any. He's going purely on visual identifiers, large orange panels marking collision vehicles, as well as the flags and distinctive markings, none of which you could make out clearly in the several minutes he was circling the convoy, mistaking the orange panels for rocket launchers.
It looks like we got orange panels on, though. Do they have any friendlies up in this area?
I understand that was northeast.
Look like flatbed trucks, and others are green vehicles. Can't quite make out the type. Look like maybe Zill 156.
Matches our intel up there.
They look like they have orange panels on, though.
He told me there's nobody north of here, no friendlies.
I know.
Okay, copy. Like I said, multiple repetitive vehicles. They look like flatbed trucks. Are those your targets?
That's affirmed.
Okay,
I think there's a rocket launcher underneath you.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, they have orange rockets on them.
Orange rockets?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me look.
Can you imagine the friendly fire death toll if James Burton had gotten his way? And all pilots flying without radar or electronic systems had to rely on visual identification to distinguish friend from foe. Burton once claimed that radar could not tell the difference between a tank and a truck full of refugees. Anyone who's worked with any kind of military radar will know that that's not true. They can. Human eyes, meanwhile, can't figure out what fucking color this dress is. Shut the fuck up. The point is, we live in a world where aircraft can spy on people taking a piss from several miles away on a screen that lights them up like a fucking Christmas tree based entirely on their body heat. Press a button and have a missile fired from 2 miles away deliver an extremely explosive warning about not having a wedding that can be easily mistaken for a terrorist gathering by a man who everyone still hails as being scandal-free because blowing up children in the third world isn't considered a fucking scandal in the US. Point is, no pilot of the A-10 should ever have to be fucking required to squint down a basic holosight or use a fucking pair of binoculars to fire a gun that has a margin of error so vast half a millimeter on the stick is the difference between a medal, a court-martial, and a fucking war crime. And this is why the A-10C now exists. The A-10C, as of 2007, does have advanced targeting systems, and as of 2010, this was upgraded to include helmet-mounted targeting displays, and in 2012 was upgraded again, this time with display screens and ECM systems able to detect missile launches and what kind of vehicle the pilot is looking at, as well as a clearer ability to detect friendly units as well as fire more precision weapons from a greater distance and altitude without having to fly low and expose themselves to man pads, which is a big problem for the A-10. I'll explain why later. The problem with all of this is not only is the A-10C now expensive, it has lost the main advantages of the design in that the original A-10 was supposed to be very rugged. It could operate from forward bases that didn't have more established runways or larger facilities full of expertly trained engineers. The A-10A could basically pull into a garage on a strip of dirt road and the mechanic there could probably quickly figure out what was wrong with it. It was a machine that could be repaired with flex tape and dreams. And now it's overcomplicated and relying on technology that reformers claim has no place in a modern battlefield. In essence, it has become the one thing it was supposed to prove was redundant, purely through necessity. The A-10 had its day where it was technologically underwhelming, and that proved to be its biggest flaw, and as a result, people died. But the A-10 may yet still be saved, because thanks to the reformers, people view this thing as a tank buster. And oh boy, does it kill a lot of tanks. Yeah, let's talk about that. As a tank hunter, the A-10 should be in its element. This is what it was designed for. Low-flying strafing of columns of tanks with an inability to hold to harass that column without much fear of return fire, as the titanium bathtub armor would keep the A-10 protected from small arms fire and low-caliber AAA weapons, as, at the time, the Soviet Union's heavier anti-air systems were reliant on rudimentary radar systems, and thus to target something flying at low level, under the radar, so to speak, the operator would have to rely on manual targeting, which the US presumed the Soviets had not trained for. This is the Fall the Gap scenario, envisioned as the Cold War gone hot, where the US genuinely believed the Soviet Union would drive all of its tanks through a tiny gap in the lowlands on the East German border as a surprise attack, and the US could just shell them indiscriminately from a distance. Ask your dad about it. During the Gulf War, the A-10 destroyed close to 900 tanks, according to Burton. Post-battlefield reports such as the 1993 one don't really give an accurate figure of what killed what, and that figure of 900 seems to have come completely out of nowhere, being reported by almost every major publication which does not cite any sources. The only number of recorded kills mentioned by the report was 1,500 by the F-111, which flew half the number of sorties the A-10 performed.
Justice for my boy!
I tried to figure out where this number was coming from. I mean, I felt like an idiot. Surely there is a report somewhere that everyone has gotten this number off of, and I'm just too dumb to find it. Or has everyone really just taken the Wikipedia number for granted? Well, I found that report. Operation Desert Storm Evaluation of the Air Campaign Letter Report 06-1297-GO and NSD 97134. And it says this.
Because data on a large number of A-10 strike events were unclear or contradictory, we found it impossible to reliably analyze and include A-10 strike data.
Great! Thank you! And this report, I mean, if you read it, it almost seems to have come from the reformers. It makes every attempt to proclaim the inefficiency of guided weapons versus conventional cheaper weapons, and plays particular host to a number of conspiracy theories regarding statistics fudging for the more expensive aircraft. For example, claiming that more F-15Es were shot down during the night than A-10s, even though A-10s couldn't operate at night particularly well and rarely did so, and only attacked secondary targets like artillery, while the F-15E flew almost exclusively at night. But what it's essentially saying is that no one had any idea how many tanks the A-10 actually blew up.
Amazing! Thank you! I don't know, I just assumed it might be an important thing to record on your multi-million dollar tank busting aircraft. Apparently not.
But let's assume 900. Let's assume Burton can gaze into the nethersphere and figure it all out, or there is some source that I'm missing.
As it turns out, there is. The claim was first made by Air Force Magazine, who did not reply to my email when I asked where they had gotten this number from.
I'm prepared to accept that. You know, this is not World War II. It was a brutal air campaign, and Iraqi tanks were bunched up and immobile like a bunch of idiots. 900 tanks. That does seem a bit much. And considering earlier, we did talk about how much tank busters in World War II would fudge up their claims. I mean, well, the US Air Force was very much aware of that. So A-10 pilots were only allowed to count kills if they physically saw the tank brew up, much to their frustration.
So was there a temptation to perhaps
fudge their kills?
Another US report, this time, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, concluded that Aleppo alone had killed 1,385 tanks.
Hey, wait a minute. The F-111 killed 1,500 and the A-10 900, then how?
During World War II, a number of German SS tankers with their shiny uniforms, advanced training, best tanks, and superior genes found themselves being regularly outperformed by the regular German Wehrmacht. It began to get to the point where the SS was starting to become a little bit embarrassed by just how many tank aces were beginning to emerge in the regular German army and not the SS.
Almost like their superior genes were not so superior.
So a number of prominent tank commanders began to, fudge their numbers, counting things like anti-tank guns, armored cars, or trucks as kills under the umbrella category armored vehicles instead of tanks. So were the A-10 pilots doing the same? Because as funny as that may sound, the F-111 pilots were doing exactly that. In both the 1993 and 1997 report, the number of kills confirmed by the F-111 are described as armored kills, which, as this chart proves, pretty much count as anything.
So did the A-10 actually, you know, kill any tanks?
Keep in mind that according to the test I mentioned earlier, the main 30mm cannon of the A-10 should not be able to do much to a T-72. The report concluded that against more modern T-62 tanks at that time being the 1970s, the gun would be next to useless. This led to the famous A-10 pilot's colouring book, a training exercise for the whole family, where little Timmy can colour in the parts of the tank the A-10's cannon can penetrate, and his dad can use it as a guide when he blows his load all over a Russian tanker's face the next day.
And I really hope they included a pack of military-issue crayons with this, because I want one.
Now, the US Air Force expressed no forgivings that the A-10's ability to make gun kills would be rare, especially against more modern T-72 tanks, which the gun was expected to, you know, just not work against. For this reason, the A-10 was equipped with a secret weapon, a fucking missile. Now, the Maverick missile was, by all standards, an outdated missile, but modernization efforts had kept it in the game, and if fired accurately, it could hit a T-72 almost anywhere and destroy it. This enraged Spray and the reformers, who constantly played the line that the missiles were dumb, expensive, and unreliable. The A-10 was a gun plane, and that was the bottom line. So, while the 1993 report concluded that the A-10 had fired 90% of all Mavericks fired during the war, and around 80% of the kills claimed by the A-10 were Maverick kills, not gun, Spray made sure that every media outlet doing any sort of piece on the A-10 exclusively talked about the gun as a tank buster. There are two points I would like to make in regards to that gun, okay? The Gau 8 fires depleted uranium rounds, which burn on contact with metal, usually sending a stream of smoke from the impact. During the live fire test, the pilot was fairly conservative with his ammo. The Gulf War pilots were not. The test pilot fired off just 174 rounds spread out over all 10 tanks he was firing at. The Gulf War pilots happily poured sometimes over 1,000 rounds of ammunition into a single target. And since the Iraqi infantry would often be dug in around the tanks, when an A-10 fired its hot sticky load all over them, they would thus be in the splash zone. So when the A-10 flew in close to confirm the kill, what it would see is a tank on fire and a lot of people running away from it. And with no way to confirm if or not the tank was actually disabled or not, they could claim a kill. Second point. While the US was under no delusion that its A-10's cannon would be useless against T-72s, it should be fair to the A-10 pilots to point out that not all Iraqi tanks were T-72s. In fact, roughly 220 of Iraq's 4,000 tanks were T-72s, and most of those were encountered by the advancing ground forces, and none of the famed line of Babylon tanks were operational. The bulk of Iraqi tanks were outdated T-54s, 55s, 62s, and Type 69s, all of which the A-10 could easily penetrate and destroy. So is the A-10 a good tank hunter? I mean, probably? Against outdated and mobile tanks in air superiority conditions, yes. Very yes. But here is the issue. Against more modern tanks, probably not. And almost any plane can carry the Maverick. The F-111 Advar. It had a vastly higher kill count because, unlike almost every other aircraft, it could carry precision strike weapons and then guide those weapons onto the target independently. The A-10 carried the red eye and could fire weapons guided to the target by infantry using laser designators, men often found that these weapons would miss so often that they stopped bothering to carry them. And this became the general impression of precision weapons. Because the A-10 pilots would see their precision weapons miss, the infantry would see their precision weapons miss, and the cameras were mostly following the A-10s and infantry around. Okay, the US wanted to showcase how precision-guided weapons could surgically end a war without a prolonged ground campaign. However, at the start of the war, only two aircraft were actually equipped to handle precision weapons without assistance, the F-111 and the F-117 respectively, and the reformers have done such a brutal job slaughtering the reputation of both aircraft that many people simply overlook it in favor of big gun go brrrr. Even when the F-111 outperformed it as a tank buster. Justice for my boy! Not even the Pavia Tornado, the most modern aircraft fielded during the war, had the necessary equipment to fire guided weapons independently, and the Brits relied on the outdated Buccaneer to provide laser designation for its weapons until the more advanced Tornadoes arrived later on in the war. Because of this, and because of the general public's view to ignore the F-111, the result has been a victory for the reformists. The public love the A-10, and they see it as a tank-destroying gunship, and view precision weapons as ineffective and expensive. Perhaps now you've watched this video, you might be able to tell your dad to shut up when he starts banging on about how much taxpayers' money the US wasted on investing in them. Earlier, I did say the A-10 had the highest record for friendlies and civilians killed by a single aircraft type, to the point where several US commanders in Afghanistan, who typically do not want to be named, requested that the A-10 be removed from the theater as it was blowing up so many civilians, the insurgents were calling it their greatest propaganda weapon. Again, this is a problem with avionics and the main gun. Even with all the upgrades, the A-10 pilots are still having trouble identifying an enemy tank from a truck full of refugees, and the genuine accuracy of the gun is just not helping. I have heard other theories from both UK and US vets, notably ones who are not pilots, as to exactly why this is, and the word bloodlust has been used more times than I'd like to say, but I mean, that doesn't really seem fair to A-10 pilots to tar them with all the same brush and say, oh yeah, they're killing civilians because they're bloodthirsty. I mean, most militaries in the world have ways of detecting people like that and either filtering them out, beating out of them, or shoving them into logistics to mop floors till they get bored and quit. That's why they all end up getting jobs as mall cops and mercenaries or special cops. The cops you see cosplaying as elite forces dressed in full tack gear with armored vehicles rolling onto some guy's home fully combat loaded to deliver a court notice. Those guys. So, most A-10 pilots, I've not met every single A-10 pilot, but most that I have met seem pretty chill, hence why I'm not blaming them, I'm blaming the plane and the politics behind it. So, let us move on from that to the A-10's fabled survivability. I mean, the Reformers have naturally taken credit for the idea that the A-10 is capable of shrugging off most anti-air missile attacks, and as I said earlier, Spray went on to make the claim that had he had his way, they proclaim, all US aircraft would be capable of doing exactly the same, making them out of titanium, making each plane cost several extra million and rely heavily on rare mineral imports from overseas. What Spray forgets, of course, is just how much the others protested at the idea of adding extra armor to the aircraft because it would lower its maneuverability. You'll note constantly, time and time again, the Reformers place emphasis on maneuverability over almost anything else. Speed, firepower, radar, fuel, the pilot's life, all can be sacrificed to make the plane just maneuver just a little bit better. In reality, however, life does not work out like the dogfights many of us dream of, so now it's time to talk about the 1980 Iraq-Iran War. Iran had just gone through a military purge, and a militia-style officer corps had seized command with many of the country's top fighter pilots being executed as suspicious individuals, as you do, leaving Iran's pilots mostly rookies, led by rookies, operating F-14 Tomcats, a fighter plane Spray had laughed at, calling it a plane with no ability to dogfight, an over-reliance on technology, and too heavy and dumb to be of use. Iraq, on the other hand, had exceptionally good pilots, well-trained, well-drilled, and had proven themselves in multiple times suppressing local uprisings. Iraqi pilots had access to the Soviet MiG-23 and the Su-20, both exceptional dogfighters in the eyes of the Iraqis and the public at the time. In the opening hours of the attack, the Iraqis launched a massive air invasion, attempting to take down Iran's air defenses, striking at air bases and destroying grounded aircraft. The attack caught the Iranians completely by surprise, and most of their aircraft was kept in heavily reinforced bunkers, and thus over the next 2 days, the Iranians responded, using A-4 Phantoms to attack key Iraqi infrastructure. When the Iraqi Air Force responded, something weird happened. One of their aircraft exploded in mid-air. There was no enemy contacts, nothing on radar. The plane simply blew up. The flight was grounded and checked, but by this point, another wing had experienced the same issue. No enemy in sight, no radar contact, but one of their planes just exploded in mid-air. Sabotage by the Beastie Boys was blamed, and each and every aircraft was checked by ground crews who found nothing wrong. Over the next 2 days, this continued to happen until the Iraqi Air Force voluntarily grounded itself, refusing to take to the skies. But what was happening was no act of sabotage. In reality, Iran's F-14 Tomcats were so advanced in terms of the Su-20s and MiG-23s, they were able to do something both planes at the time could not, which was perform an over-the-horizon attack. The F-14s were able to detect Iraqi planes, lock on, fire, and destroy them without the Iraqis even being aware that they were under attack. This was 1980. This was the death of the dogfight. And the idea that a good pilot will always beat technology was shattered in an instant. Not that that philosophy is a particularly bad one. If the 1991 Gulf War leaves you with anything to take away, is that Iraq lost 110 aircraft and not a single one to guns. In fact, since the Vietnam War, the US Air Force has been involved in 50 dogfights, and out of all of them, only two shot down their targets with guns. Both of those were A-10s firing at helicopters. The F-15, the inferior fighter according to Spray, has utterly dominated the aviation scene at 103 kills to zero losses when accounting for its use on the global scale by multiple countries. Only two other aircraft have achieved a 0% loss record in combat, the Su-27 and the Harrier, and neither have come close to beating that kill record. Thus, we should be thankful that, in reality, Spray and his cronies are routinely ignored by everyone outside of the mainstream media, most of whom barely qualify as journalists anymore. I mean, the extra armor added to the A-10 was an attempt to negate the low survivability of an aircraft which, you know, already had a low survivability rate to begin with because of its role. I mean, the A-10 cannot, you know, tank hits as many believe it, but it is designed in such a way that if if it is hit, it can limp home, or, you know, it has an increased chance to land safely, or for just to give time for the pilot to eject. The A-10 can withstand small caliber rounds, up to 23 millimeters high explosive fired from an autocannon, like the Gush 23. I'm calling it the Gush, okay? It's the 23rd Gush. Which is something you'll find in service on older Soviet-era jets and helicopters, or, you know, Banana Republics, or, you know, African warlords' personal limos. But not really something you'd find in military service anymore. Anything larger would shred the A-10 to pieces, and at no point has the A-10 ever survived a direct hit from an air-to-air or air-to-ground missile. Or ground-to-air missile. Or just a missile, really. I mean, images of the A-10 with chunks missing has been widely circulated by the reformers and fans of the aircraft, but, you know, do little to disguise the number of A-10s who did not make it home. I mean, the A-10 suffered more losses than any other coalition aircraft, in spite of operating in an area where air defenses were considered exactly what the A-10 had been designed to withstand, and are vastly inferior to modern-day equivalents. Unofficial sources claim about 70 of the 144 A-10s suffered minor damage, with 6 being lost and 15 damaged beyond repair. Now, this was due to a problem that many avid fans of aviation combat, in my experience, just don't quite seem to be aware of. I'm going to ask those people to get a little bit closer. Closer still. Closer still. Are you ready? Did you want to know the big secret? Flying low to avoid radar no longer works. Okay, so I know what you're thinking. That goes against everything that you think you know. The idea that the A-10 couldn't fly under radar and avoid SAM sites was shattered in the Gulf War when, you know, the SAM sites it was targeting, considered inferior to modern-day equivalents, just to remind you, targeted and shot them down anyway. The result was that the A-10s were forced to fly at higher altitudes and essentially dive on their targets, reducing their accuracy, but also reducing their ability to accurately find or identify targets, leading to the blue-on-blue incidences as mentioned earlier. Because they have to, you know, look at the ground with a pair of binoculars and they mistake orange panels for rocket launchers. Flying low to avoid radar, it is a thing that can work in exceptionally rare circumstances. I mean, yeah, if you're flying against ground radar in particularly hilly terrain or against really, really outdated and rudimentary systems, flying low can work. But radars can be attuned to pick up anything that it wants, and some of the more advanced ones can detect birds, apparently. But they are typically set to ignore them. I mean, some former professor at the University of Washington explained it all to me, and now I want to die. You notice there's been a lot of people on Discord trying to explain how all of this shit works to me. I have been lectured so many times, I don't even need a subscription to CuriosityStream. It comes to me. Stop trying to call me and explain things to me, okay? I only have one life. I want to sit and drink margarita and eat chocolates. I don't want an explanation on how the ground effect works and how if you move perpendicular to a radar, technically you're invisible to that. Like, it's too confusing. Okay? I'm scared. But, you know, the long and short of it is that radar can see through trees. So even if you're flying at treetop level, at radar can see you. I mean, but for some reason, people seem to think that there's this magical altitude that if you are below it, radar can't see you. Woo! I mean, yes, normally radar is set above a certain altitude because things like tall buildings and flocks of birds and the sun are all things that can cause radar interference. So you kind of want to set your radar up so that all that shit isn't causing your screen to fill up with garbage, which is, I mean, you're fine if you're an air traffic controller and you don't want to be distracted by, like, a forest of trees as you track airlines. But let's say you're in a war and you're expecting to be attacked by planes, and you're in a country that famously doesn't have many large, dense regions of forest. And you're sitting in an airbase which, you know, typically built in places quite high up and very flat, and, the only way the A-10 is going to avoid radar detection is if it lands and drives to the target. And we have something that does that already. It's called a tank. I mean, even then we have radar that can detect shit on the ground. It's It's called FLIR. How do you think ground munitions work? Fucking magic? Jesus. Don't answer that. I can't hear you. This is all pre-recorded. And honestly, if you were not aware of ground radar and the fact that radar can in fact distinguish between tanks and trucks... Oh boy. You need help. And there are many things in this world that... World War II is over, boys. We have technology now. Anyway, I want to go back to armor. Titanium, in spite of what every 14-year-old boy thinks, is not a magical substance that can block bullets and tank rounds like it's made of magical wizard material. You know, the one that appears in every comic book to give an excuse to why the hero has a sword in a world where guns exist? My sword is made from the finest unobtainium. It can slice through anything! I mean, it also has a weakness. The A-10 is not indestructible. It is vulnerable to man pads and maxi pads, whatever. And it has proven to have a large cause for concern, so much that low-level flying is fast approaching the point where it's no longer considered an option, and many A-10 pilots a day are trained to fire it from a medium altitude, as well as recognize SAM launches and maneuver to avoid missiles. You know, hence the A-10 having to be, you know, maneuverable. So it can move out of the way if a missile is being shot at. You understand, it's fine. Anyway, the other problem, of course, is it's being a single-seater. The workload of the A-10 was and still is considered in the extreme, and often pilots would get shot down while trying to line up Maverick shots, distracted by the heavy workload required. I'll come back to that in a minute. So with all that, we now have to ask ourselves the question, the ultimate question. If it can't perform ground attacks, be a close air support aircraft, or hunt tanks, what exactly is the A-10 doing in service?
It's a good question.
Well, actually, it's doing all of those things. You may notice that this bit of the recording sounds slightly different, and that's because I'm in a different room than where I normally record, thanks to the workmen outside my apartment who decided to turn the street into a playground for diggers for the past 4 weeks. That's been great, really helpful. Thank you, guys. Very cool. Anyway, it's doing all those things, only it's doing it in a way that Pierre Spray and the other reformers claimed would never happen. By using its bombs and missiles to destroy objectives at a long range, and kind of only using its cannon on softer targets that are clear of friendlies. The biggest advantage of the A-10 is not the fact that it's got a giant cannon on it, it's the fact that it can carry bombs. Many bombs. With the problem being that almost any aircraft in the US inventory can kind of do the same job, and as a result, the A-10 has just been involved in about 20% of close air support cases. Now, its eventual replacement will be the F-35, and you can fight me on that. The Air Force has considered a number of cheaper alternative planes to replace it, including this thing. The Longsword, it's called. That's a crop duster.
That's a freaking crop duster. What? Why?
A proposed replacement program began in 2015 and has gone back and forth ever since, cancelled, uncancelled, again and again and again, with the latest claim being that the US plans to keep the A-10 in its inventory indefinitely. Now, why is this? I've just spent the past 45 minutes telling you that this plane sucks. Why does the US disagree? Well, there are two main issues. Firstly, the A-10 has a lot of friends in high places. The fighter plane mafia still holds a bit of sway and influence over a number of high-profile military advisors, generals, and senators. Most famously, the late Senator John McCain, who was slapped down in front of a camera to talk about how shit the F-35 is while clearly not knowing anything about it. McCain was an avid defender of the A-10, and this footage of him as chairman of the Armed Services Committee, putting down people with his famous one-liners and quips, is shown to the delight of A-10 fans young and old. Because it is quite funny. I mean, it is quite funny when he goes full McCain. Here, of course, he's told that the A-10 should be withdrawn from service, and rather than asking why, he just makes the point of deflecting the argument to joke about the B-1 bomber doing close air support, which he refuses to take seriously.
Unmanned, the B-1 bomber will now be used for close air support?
So it is my belief that the B-1 bomber has done some close air support in Afghanistan. So we would cover it with existing aircraft, and of course, down the line...
That's a remarkable statement. That doesn't comport with any experience I've ever had.
He then goes on to proclaim loudly that the A-10 will never be withdrawn from service. End of discussion. Should be no surprise that almost immediately after his death, A-10s find themselves on the mothball list. Actually, none of that's true. Well, it is and it isn't. I was just going to leave that as it is and hoping to try and catch out anyone who hadn't really watched the videos. They just looked at the titles or had seen the Forbes articles about them. But to be honest, I have a lot of respect for John McCain, so I can't be doing this to the man's memory. Look, okay, so that first video, he's not talking about the performance of the F-35, he's talking about the budget and how procurement famously lets budgets run away sometimes billions over budget without any real explanation. He considered not being able to implement laws which would make the procurement more personally responsible for budget overspends his biggest failure, not the performance of the F-35. The second video, he's talking down to this dried piece of fruit of a secretary, and I'll just run the clip in full for you.
I would ask for your thoughts as to what would replace the A-10 aircraft in its close air support role.
So, Senator McCain, in terms of the A-10, what is intended to replace the percentage that the A-10 was doing in terms of close air support in the immediate future would be the other aircraft, such as F-16, F-15E, and so forth, that are capable
what
of doing
forth?
That.
What so forth? Tell me again, the so forth here.
F-15E, F-16, B-1 bombers, some of our unmanned
The B-1 vehicles. Bomber will now be used for close air support?
So it is my belief that the B-1 bomber has done some close air support in Afghanistan. So we would cover it with existing aircraft, and of course, down the line.
That's a remarkable statement. That doesn't comport with any experience I've ever had, nor anyone I know has ever had. See, this is an example. You're throwing in the B-1 bomber as a close air support weapon to replace the A-10. This is the reason why there is, is such incredible skepticism here in the Congress. And believe me, we will, under the present environment, I can't speak for the committee. I can only speak for myself and several others. You will not pursue the elimination of the finest close air support weapon system in the world with answers like that. So I hope you will come up with something that is credible to those of us who have been engaged in this business for a long, long time.
What he's basically saying, for those who don't speak political speak, if you want to replace the A-10, you're not going to convince anyone that the B-1 is fit for the job. And he's right. If you just scroll down the comments, everyone is laughing at her. He's trying to tell her that she basically needs to come up with a more convincing argument than we'll replace the A-10 with the B-1 bomber. That's not fooling anyone. But why is this? I mean, why is the B-1 performing close air support missions, granted in a limited capacity? But it has done it, and it's done it quite well. Surprisingly well. But the B-1 doing close air support missions goes against everything we know, or at least everything that we think we know, and that's about what's needed in a close air support aircraft. I mean, people will sit there and tell me the most important aspects of close air support aircraft, and they will go on about loiter time and the need for maneuverability and less speed, because that's what it says in fucking Wikipedia. They forget that that shit was written in the 1960s. Things have moved on quite a bit since Vietnam, and it misses the most important aspect required for close air support aircraft, which is fucking situational awareness. You know, the reason the plane has to be slow is to give the pilot time to see what's going on the ground, and the reason it has to be armored is because if there's a plane slowly flying above overhead, the enemy is going to point their rifles up and start firing. That's why it needs to be armored. That's why it needs to be slow. And looking out of the windows to see what you can see is fine in Pierre Spray fantasy land, but this is no longer the world we live in. The Second World War is over. We have technology now. Fuck, even the Harrier has the swivel camera that locks onto shit that's on the ground. Like, it can do that from miles away. And the A-10 is considerably more modern, supposedly, but still has to have the pilot lean out of the cockpit with a pair of binoculars. You seriously thought that was okay? You didn't think they'd have a problem trying to, I don't know, pick out ant-sized targets on the ground hiding in cover while camouflaged against the thing they're hiding against? Or, you know, maybe it was important that the fucking A-10 pilot could identify between a small, brightly colored tank and a fucking truck. I mean, fucking hell, dude, why do you think snipers have scopes on them? Eyes can't zoom. Unless you're a cyborg. You're not a cyborg, are you?
I mean, you can't reliably tell what's going on the ground at 10,000 feet by looking out the window. Any pilot can tell you that. I mean, did it occur to you why the Brits dropped their close air support Harrier, that's slow and heavily armed with those big 30mm twin Aiden cannons, for the IDS variant of the Tornado, one of the fastest jets they've ever produced? Does that maybe drop some hints that, you know, what you think you know is, I don't know, wrong? Anyway, what the fuck was I saying? Right, B-1's doing close air support, the F-15 does it too, and it does it better, but for the same reason. But this video is long, and I don't know about you, but I get tired of hearing my own voice, like, after 10 seconds. I don't know, what do you guys think? Is my voice annoying? Get whiny? Do you sense how majestically obese and sweaty I am? Why the fuck do you think I went for a pig? Maybe I'll change it to an anime girl, and then you can listen to military facts as you stare at digital bouncing boobs. Every man's dream. Anyway, to conclude. Okay, in spite of everything, the A-10 has proven an exceptionally good bomber aircraft, a light bomber aircraft, which is something that the US is kind of missing. Since it's been in service for so long, finding trainer pilots or replacement parts or engineers has not really proven to be a problem. It is one of the cheapest aircrafts to buy, it's easy on the fuel, and since it can lift off from short runways and dirt fields, they can be deployed just about anywhere. And the cannon is good for attacking small isolated targets when air superiority is guaranteed, or bringing down helicopters. And while it'll be next to useless versus more modern tanks and equipment, the reality is that in spite of all the posturing, the long-anticipated US versus China war will probably never happen, or be nothing but a prolonged Cold War, or fought through backed third-party affiliate countries on a smaller scale. The next war America involves itself in is not likely going to be with a country with advanced modern equipment, so for as long as backwater countries continue to buy old Soviet-era tanks with questionable upgrade packages, the A-10 will remain a viable weapon, cheaper to upgrade than replace. There's also that second factor I mentioned. Nothing is more morale-boosting than watching an A-10 open up on something, and US commanders have typically scheduled target practice for A-10s in areas where demoralized or rookie troops can watch them and upload videos to YouTube, and nothing is more rising to the spirits of a pinned unit than hearing that sharting cannon open fire on your enemy. On the other side, during both Iraq wars, Iraqi prisoners gave testimony to the effectiveness of the A-10 in causing them to desert their posts. To them, nothing was more terrifying than hearing one overhead, sweeping around in lazy arcs and vaporizing any target that caught its attention, especially since without specialist anti-air units, there was nothing they could really do about it. All of this meaning that the A-10 is probably going to stay in service for a lot longer, and the reformers will lap it up, advertising it as a rotary cannon tank hunter, the supreme example of how the cannon will always beat the missile, and how technology, super advanced technology, is just not needed on a battlefield, even if the A-10 proves the exact opposite. So does the A-10 suck? I mean, yeah, kind of, but it still works. And if I was an insurgent fighter hiding in my cave, I doubt the knowledge of the A-10's bad accuracy and overhyped performance would make me sleep any better at night knowing one was overhead. Anyway, my throat hurts and I want to go drink tequila. That's all for me. Thank you for listening, if you still are. Don't forget to dislike and tell me to go fuck myself in the comments.
Swept your AMC! We will stand firm, face it all together. Let the sky fall, and it permits. We will stand firm, face it all together. Let the sky fall. Fucking hell.